नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नारायणं
नमस्कृत्य
Canto 4, Chapter 29, Texts 39 through 40, which are actually put together with one translation. Yatra Bhagavata Raja
Yatra Bhagavata Raja
Sadhava Vishadashaya
Sadhava Vishadashaya
Bhagavad Gunanukatana
Bhagavad
My dear king, in the place where pure devotees live, following the rules and regulations, and thus purely conscious and engaged with great eagerness in hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of God. In that place, if one gets a chance to hear the constant flow of nectar, which is exactly like the waves of a river, one will forget the necessities of life, namely hunger and thirst, and become immune to all kinds of fear, lamentation, and illusion. So, purport. The cultivation of Krishna consciousness is possible where great devotees live together and constantly engage in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In a holy place like Vrindavan, there are many devotees constantly engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. If one gets the chance to hear from pure devotees in such a place, allowing the constant flow of the river of nectar to come from the mouths of pure devotees, then the cultivation of Krishna consciousness becomes very easy. When one is engaged in constantly hearing the glories of the Lord, he certainly rises above the bodily conception. When one is in the bodily conception, he feels the pangs of hunger and thirst, fear, lamentation, and illusion. But when one is engaged in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, he transcends the bodily conception. Anybody else want to read the next part?
The word Bhagavad Gunanu Katana Shravana Vyaka Chetasa, meaning always eager to find the place where the glories of the Lord are being heard and chanted, is significant in this verse. A businessman is always very eager to go to a place where business is transacted. Similarly, a devotee is very eager to hear from the lips of liberated devotees. As soon as one hears the glories of the Lord from the liberated devotees, he immediately becomes impregnated with Krishna consciousness. This is also confirmed in another verse, Satam Prasanga Anumama Virya Samvido
Bhavanti Vidkarna Rasayana Katha Tadjoshanana Svapavarga Vartmani Chadara Dirbhakti Anukamishyati.
In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and to the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced in the path of liberation, and thereafter he is free and his attraction becomes fixed. Then, real devotion and devotional service begin. Bhagavatam 3.25.25. In the association of pure devotees, one becomes attached to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In this way, one can cultivate Krishna consciousness. And as soon as this cultivation is advanced, one can become faithful to the Lord, devoted to the Lord, and attached to the Lord. Thus, one can very quickly attain full Krishna consciousness. The secret of success in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness is hearing from the right person. A Krishna conscious person is never disturbed by the bodily necessities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
Om Agyanati Nirandasya Gyananjana Shwakaya Chakshur Umiritam Yantasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a wonderful verse, isn't it, about the glories of being with in the association of pure devotees. So first I want to bring your attention to the phrase, constant flow of nectar. Have you in material existence or anywhere in your experience outside of Krishna consciousness, have you ever come across that term or experienced that? Like, oh, that person's speaking a flow of nectar. It's very unique for our, it's a unique term, and it's something that we automatically, when we hear it, we immediately know what that means, right? Because what is nectar? What is that? What does it remind you of? What does a flow of nectar remind you of? Sweetness? Sweetness, right?
Lassi.
Lassi, yeah. Uh-huh. Sweetness, right? So we already have this, the imagery of nectar itself, right? The sweetness of it, the satisfying, the way it fulfills us when we drink it. The flowing, the constant, Prabhupada says here in the purport, the constant flow of the river of nectar that comes from the mouths of pure devotees. So it's constant because Krishna is constant, we get to a point where we finally understand everything and we got it down. And now we know everything about Krishna and the river kind of ends. It's never like that. It's constant because Krishna is always revealing new aspects of himself. There's always something new to discover. And in the association of devotees, that we pick up on that river, that constant flow. Like yesterday in the class, Madhava Prabhu was saying how these great devotees wish that they had so many ears because of that constant flowing nectar. You wish you could take it all in, but because we're, especially in this material world, we're conditioned, we have a stamina that only goes so long, we start getting hungry and so on. It takes time before we reach that stage of being able to completely lose ourselves in that, in Krishna consciousness. Like here it's saying, when we're with pure devotees, then we get a glimpse into what that's like. We forget about our hunger and thirst, and we become free of all fear, lamentation, and illusion. So I wanted to talk today about pure devotee association, and I was thinking about why it is that when we're with pure devotees, that we automatically, like, why is this happening where we're becoming inspired in the presence of pure devotees? So pure devotees of Krishna are constantly talking and living Krishna consciousness, right? So they have become completely imbued with Krishna. And when we're in their company, we tap into that flow, that Krishna's presence is right there with that devotee because they're completely absorbed in Krishna. And what's happening is, in order to understand this fully, we have to first look at what our situation is. And our situation is that we already are Krishna conscious. Our natural position is already constantly absorbed in Krishna. We've just been covered over, right? So if you think of the analogy of, I don't know if how many of you here know about, like, when you dig a well, and I just learned about this. I was talking to my father about this verse, and we came up with this analogy of a well. And if you're setting up the pump that goes in the well that starts the water flow, then you have to first prime that water pump by pouring water into it. And then it pulls, and then it starts the process of pulling the water out of the ground. So if you think about our situation, is that we already have that, we're already filled with, our connection with Krishna is already there, and the association of devotees is like that water pump is priming the pump of our well of spiritual life, so that it kind of gets us excited about, this is my nature, and we start to feel something happening when we're in that association. Then what happens is, once that priming has begun, then automatically as the layers of conditioning over ourselves are removed, then automatically we go through those stages of spiritual life where we become spontaneously attracted on our own. So the pure devotees, what they're doing is they're giving association and they're talking about Krishna, and it actually ignites our original inclinations towards serving Krishna. So you know that that famous, it was on the record, that famous recording of Prabhupada talking about the holy names? Not an artificial imposition on the mind. Not an artificial imposition. This consciousness is the original energy of the living entity. When we hear the transcendental vibration of the holy name, this consciousness is revived. So it's already there, it's dormant, and it's being revived. And when we're in the association of pure devotees, that gets activated. It's like our soul kind of wakes up from that dormant state. Oh, Krishna, it becomes comes alive. Another example, if you're thinking about in music, they have these tuning forks. So there's this really interesting thing that happens with tuning forks, where if you vibrate one of them and another one is nearby, that tuning fork will also start vibrating because it's at the same frequency. There are these little metal, kind of horseshoe-shaped things. So you're vibrating one of them, and then the one nearby starts vibrating. It's like that when we're in the association of devotees, that our spiritual attraction to Krishna starts vibrating in that intense vibration of their association. And then Prabhupada, later on, he says, there is no need to understand the language of the mantra, nor is there any need for mental speculation or any intellectual adjustment for chanting this Maha Mantra. It springs automatically from the spiritual platform, and as such, anyone can take part in the chanting without any previous qualification and dance in ecstasy. And then he goes on to say, we have seen this practically. Even a child can take part in the chanting, or even a dog can take part in it. So it's natural to all of us, no matter what our bodily condition looks like. This is the real transcendental equality, where we all have the opportunity to find attraction in Krishna, regardless of their body that we're in. Even if it's a dog's body, he's saying that he's seen that even with dogs being attracted to Krishna. And I remember as a kid when we had a dog, we would, after the Sunday feast, we would come home and bring prasadam. And my dad would always say, chant Hare Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. And then my dog would start barking. And then we would give him some prasadam. But that even though it's kind of, it's tainted obviously by the dog's desire to have food, but we're kind of the dog is chanting. So, yeah. So, it's not an artificial imposition, and if you think about the name of Krishna, he's all attractive. So our nature is to be attracted by that all attractive person. There's actually no way that we can't be attracted to Krishna. We try as hard as possible. Another example I was thinking a lot about water because of the analogy of the flow of the river. So picture this flowing river of our intense, in our natural position of servants to Krishna, we're intensely drawn towards wanting to serve Krishna. And imagine that as a flowing river, maybe a waterfall, like this really rushing, flowing river. Then in this material world, what we've done is we've constructed a dam to block that, to kind of create our illusion of being in this material world that we can be happy without Krishna. So we kind of create this, so to speak, a material dam, like the beavers of material illusion. The analogy gets a bit strange, but if we built this dam to kind of resist looking towards spiritual life and instead focusing on the material, then what happens when we're in the association of pure devotees, whether we want it or not, whether we realize it or not, we have to, of course, want it a little bit. We have to be some willingness. But if we're in the company of devotees, what happens is that dam starts getting chiseled away at by talks of Krishna. And so that what was originally there, that river that's already there, is going to end up, the dam is going to end up breaking down in the company of devotees. the talks of Krishna. So the only thing that can really stop that flow of mercy from being in the association of devotees is if we're unwilling to be there, like if we set up that wall, we just don't want to be talking about spiritual topics. And there's, you know, most of our time in this material world has been spent that way, right? We've been wanting to avoid Krishna, wanting to find our own enjoyment. So we've spent most of our time being unwilling and uninterested. And then the other thing that can stop that, the ability to get that association of pure devotees is what? What do you think that might be?
Offenses.
Offenses, yes. That also stops that flow of nectar that we are, that we could potentially get from being with devotees. So that's why it's so important to be careful about offending devotees. We want to become the kind of devotee that other devotees will later on, like say when they later on in life, they'll look back and they'll think, that devotee was someone that I enjoyed being around. That's the devotee that I wouldn't mind if they were in the same room as me. Or that devotee brought something to my spiritual life that I'm grateful for. So we want to become that kind of devotee that others think favorably about. And not the kind of devotee where someone thinks, oh boy, I sure hope they don't come to the program, or something like that. So it is I'm making it very simplistic, but to think of it in that way, to think about how can I become the kind of devotee that others will think favorably about and give me a spiritual reference. Because in the material world, you know, who you know is more important than what you know, right? So same in spiritual life. If you actually, if devotees think favorably of you, you have, automatically you get Krishna's mercy. So it's very important to get good spiritual reference letters. Yeah. So sometimes when, you know, we can get complacent or take things for granted. I don't know about you, but I definitely can. It helps me sometimes to keep that, in order to stay grateful about the kind of association we have. I have sometimes done this little thing where I picture myself completely isolated, like no devotees around at all. So I just want to I want you to take a moment and close your eyes. And just for a moment, imagine that you are in a, perhaps a bustling city, and surrounded by the material energy, and there are no devotees anywhere in your life. What would that feel like? What does that bring up inside of you when you think about that? A life without devotees of Krishna. The exercise was really just to kind of picture our lives without, to kind of feel grateful for the devotees we have. But you make a good point about when we're anywhere in the material world, nothing is really separated from Krishna. Every living entity is in their original position, a devotee of Krishna, and we just have to help them reignite that. So in some ways, we're never lost. We're never away from Krishna in any situation. And everybody in the material energy is a devotee. So that's an important point. And at the same time, appreciating the Sangha we do have and the devotees we have. And then the second point also is really good about how sometimes in material love we get an example of what that looks like of forgetting ourselves in the intensity of it. And at the same time, in the material world, nothing lasts. So that's the difference between spiritual life and material life, is that that experience will continue in spiritual life. You know the story of lifting of Govardhan Hill, where everybody under the hill just forgot about everything for a full week. So that's kind of what it's going to be like. It becomes Krishna focused and not me focused anymore. So yeah, so thank you. Those are good points. I wanted to also mention that I've been working or volunteering at hospice in Gainesville, and So I've been thinking a lot about the dying process and death. And the one of the ways that Devotee Association and the Association of Spiritual People helps us profoundly at that time in our lives. That's the time in our life when we will really need it the most. And I've seen, kind of get this realization when you see people that close to dying, that they are very vulnerable. You get this, it's almost as if they've become babies again or something like that. They're helpless, their breathing starts becoming very difficult. And you just think about how at that time in our lives we're very vulnerable and how much we would be benefited from having that strong spiritual support of others at that time in our lives. Has anybody else here been around someone who was dying? Yeah? Okay. I've been doing this. So when I go sometimes into rooms where the person's near the end, but there's no one else around, and they don't have family there, I'll just try to bring them that, a little bit of that spiritual hope, and I talk to them about like what spiritual things, the spiritual happiness that lies ahead with spiritual consciousness, and I sing to them, chant, and yeah. So it's a really wonderful opportunity for devotees to. I was just thinking about this whole hospice experience, how it's a wonderful opportunity because people are at their most helpless and they really finally are getting to that place where they realize they're not the body, you know, that the body is just not working anymore. They're gasping for air. It can be kind of gruesome sometimes, things coming out of their mouths. And in that moment, if a devotee or a spiritually minded person can help them focus their consciousness on what's actually who they really are and what's actually lying ahead. So that's something that's been on my mind with association. The other thing I wanted to mention is that because I tend to be interested in psychology, so I was thinking about what it means for different people to have association when they're made up, we're in this bodies and we also have these minds that act in different ways, and each one of us has that unique combination. Some people are very sociable, and they love being around people, often referred to as extroverts, so when they're in parties and when they're big crowds, they get excited and they get filled up, they get recharged in social settings. And then other people tend to recharge more when they're alone or with one or two people in small settings. And they're usually called introverts. And then there's, of course, people who have both. And I was thinking about how we could find ways to get association that also fits our natures psychologically. So what are some things that you can think of for people who maybe are more on the introverted side, who actually struggle, who and there's many of them, there's a big percentage of Americans, even though our culture tends to be very extroverted, there's a good chunk of us that are introverted, and what do you think are some ways to get association for people who might have a hard time being in big audience, big crowds, big festivals? Yeah.
Actually, I read this in the lecture once. It said that you need to have three kinds of associations. Someone who is a senior, someone who is a peer, and someone who is a junior to us. But it doesn't mean that we need to have a whole host, but at least just one person to interact with. So if you're introverted in nature, having that one person who is in those different categories and having spiritual association with them through that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so it's not necessarily about quantity as much as it is about the quality of the relationship.
My understanding is that people sort of on the introverted spectrum just often have an inability or lack of desire to engage, and small talk. So, like, yeah. Situations where that's required is just so awkward. I think engaging and, like, studying sacred texts, small groups, can be really enlivening, because it goes straight to the source, straight to the philosophy,
right.
And is just bypassing all that small talk.
Yeah.
I think that's really crucial.
That is crucial. I was actually looking up what introverts and extroverts kind of thrive with, and that was one thing that was mentioned, is that people who lean towards introversion don't have a hard time with small talk, and it takes a toll on them. So that's really, it's actually a benefit in spiritual life, because if you can find friends who immediately want to get to the deep stuff, then it actually is helpful for people like that, for people who struggle with small talk. And it's important to remember this in spiritual life, that there's an opportunity for each one of us to find our something that enthuses us, and a way for us to get association that might not fit what everybody else is doing, or the general. So if we can keep in mind that there's different ways that people interact and their ways that they thrive, then it really helps. Any other thoughts or questions?
I have a question. You know, it's nice to be in the association of devotees and take that inspiration and get vibrating with the transcendental sound vibration. But, how do we develop the strength to be able to maintain that on our own?
Once we've been inspired by that devotee association, we reach that, like you were saying, that vibration of spiritual life. It's important to find ways to keep steadily progressing, and finding ways in our life to keep up that inspiration. Like, for example, a lot of times, and I've noticed this in my experience, that I'll go to a retreat and it's really blissful, and then after the retreat ends, come home and you kind of crash. And so to find a way to bridge that and to keep something consistent so that you continually are moving up. And that might look like maybe talking to someone who is there, continuing the discussions, or finding something. And noticing that when my barometer is dropping, like, ooh, my enthusiasm is starting to fade, finding someone to tell, find someone to talk to about Krishna, and see if that can be ignited again, and keeping it going, right, through steadiness, through steady service, and through steady activity. That's a very quick answer. Working on our internal lives can look different for each one of us. One thing I've done that I found helpful is journaling and writing letters to Krishna, writing letters to devotees, writing your prayers, and keeping that deep connection with the acharyas, with spiritual master through, it can be through prayer, but I personally love writing, so that's my way of keeping that inner river flowing, finding ways to keep inspired. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a wonderful day.